And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
It's so classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on podcastufo.com. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Martin Willis, your host. In just a minute, we have Alejandro Rojas coming up with the news. I just found out just a couple of minutes ago that Artie Six Killer Clark, I woke her up, actually, called her. She said she's sick in bed, forgot all about the show this evening. So she will not be joining us. Luckily, just happenstance, a listener to the show happens to be here visiting in my area. He is a retired Boston police officer named Donnie Goslin. He has had a couple of sightings, and we're going to be here in studio talking. So please, if you're listening to the live stream or watching us, I should say, on YouTube, please go ahead and pose some questions off to us as we go along here. And we'll try to make a two-hour show. I sure hope we don't run out of stuff to talk about. We'll do what we can. And so I do want to thank the people that support the show. And if you can't support the show, you can always watch it for, or listen to it for free on podcastufo.com every Wednesday evening at 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also listen to it on the Dark Matter Digital Network the following evening as a podcast, and that's 10 to midnight, and that's Eastern Standard Time as well. Big news, we are going to be live streaming free shows that are, I'm going to call it the Everything Else Show, and that's going to be on Monday evenings. It's not going to be every Monday evening, and if you'd like to find out when we have one coming up, just go ahead and sign up at podcastufo.com. You'll see a little weekly newsletter. It also announces upcoming guests. And every time I have a Monday evening show on Everything Else, I will send off a newsletter to announce it. So, Alejandro, thanks so much for joining us. I know you're very busy.
Yeah, no problem. Always a pleasure.
And another little shout-out I'd like to do for Mark, who wrote me an email and says, you know, this show means a lot to him. He listens to it every week, and it really helps him out a lot. He has something to look forward to. And he mentioned you, Alejandro. He said you're a blast to have on the news, and all good stuff.
Hey, thanks, Mark.
Yeah.
Glad you like it.
Yeah. So what's going on with the news this week?
Oh, there's a couple interesting things. I mean, there's always some news in news in the tabloids that people see. And one of the stories the tabloids picked up recently, which mentions us, actually, which is nice. However, it's kind of piggybacking on a story that Lee Spiegel wrote a few months ago, which was about the UN and how some of the WikiLeaks referred to the UN. And back in the 70s, you know, Lee Spiegel helped the UN put on this event and everything. And so that's news going around, and I just say that just because you might see it. But don't forget, Lee Spiegel was there, and, you know, his stories on the Huffington Post have a first-person account of how everything went down out there. Otherwise, yeah, we've got the conference going on, so I always try to turn that into news. So, you know, I'm knee-deep in that, so hopefully you'll humor me. But at openminds.tv, you can just read more about two retired colonels who will be coming to the speaker, and they'll be part of a panel to kind of debate, you know, government and how they're involved with UFOs. Now, you're aware of who these two gentlemen are. They've been on this show, and that's John Alexander and Charles Holt. So without getting into more details about them, you can read about that at the site. And also, I did mention on here before about how OpenMinds.tv was in the WikiLeaks. So I did write a story that outlines that a little further. Mm-hmm. But other than that, there are a couple mysteries we have from MUFON. Would you like to hear about those?
Yes, I was looking at that. There's,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so the first one is a witness who says she was at Titusville on January 19th at 8:15 p.m., and she was in the stands near where they launched the missiles or rockets mm-hmm. at the Kennedy Space Center. So she was at the viewing area, which is in Titusville, an area called Titusville. And she says she was standing up and she was looking around. They were waiting for the rocket to launch when she saw an extremely bright object that was yellow-green. It was wide, and she said it was close and that it streaked by. She said, look, and that a couple people caught a glimpse, but mostly they didn't. But someone caught a glint and said it was a meteorite mm-hmm. and just kind of blew it off. But she felt it was something more. She thought it was odd and it was strangely shaped. And it, funny enough, that launch was delayed because of something in the area. However, she's the only one to report this. So it could have been a meteorite. I mean, she drew a picture of what she saw, and she thought it was kind of more elongated and kind of yellow and green and strange colors. However, you know, the news, people have found out what it was that had caused the launch to be discontinued. It actually was delayed because they were having technical issues. And then finally, when they're ready to launch, they couldn't because of what they called a wayward craft. And it turns out it was probably a Homeland Security craft that for some stupid reason was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And so that the launch was delayed. It eventually did go up, and it was so you can read more about that case. Another one is these Texas booms.
Right.
So this was about midnight on December 6th. A lot of people around Lake Jackson, Texas, heard a large boom, and nobody knows what it was. It was in the news, and, you know, there's a little bit of an article there that is posted in the story, and a lot of people heard it, and, you know, the police got accounts of it, but nobody knows what it was. The MUFON investigator closed it as an unknown, although it wasn't an object, but he did a pretty thorough investigation. And in that investigation, he spoke to the weather service. He talked to the police. The police said they hadn't heard it themselves, but many people did call in. People had said their homes had rattled. And there were quite a few people, at least 100 witnesses, perhaps more, they say, that heard this large boom, and nobody knows what it was.
Now, did they, of course, they checked with, I'm sure, the Air Force to see there wasn't anything breaking the sonic boom?
Well, not as far as I know. They checked with the Weather Service, who has a radar. They spoke with, like I said, the police department, who said that they had checked around. They don't say specifically they had spoken with the Air Force, but, you know, it's a possibility.
Now, I was in California for 9 years, and I was working one day in an auction gallery, and all of a sudden it was a loud boom, but it was an earthquake. And there's several different types of earthquake. And this one was just like the whole floor dropped like a foot all of a sudden. And made this loud boom. It was, you know, so I'm sure if there was an earthquake, they would have, they definitely would report that because that would be everywhere on the Richter scales and everything. But,
well, there's a lot of possibilities. It could be a meteorite that's happened. You know, we saw that in Russia where that was recorded. It even made windows break. So that's possible, and that wouldn't necessarily be able to be tracked. It could be an Air Force aircraft. That would be a little bit odd because, you know, usually if you hear sonic booms, if you're in an area where you hear sonic booms, it's because you're near a training area or something like that and you're used to it. Although, you know, we would hear them in the mountains in various places, hiking into the woods, just, you know, in places that you have to hike a few miles to get into. When I was a kid, we'd camp, and we would hear some sonic booms from planes flying over, and I guess they felt, you know, in these less densely populated areas, they could do that. But we would be able to identify it as an airplane.
Yeah.
But you're right. There are other things that can cause this. I guess there is sort of a weather phenomena that can cause this as well. So, so who knows? But, of course, some people think that it might be aliens.
You mean the guy with the funny hair?
Well, he hasn't said that. However, you know, he probably would go there.
Yeah, possibly.
That's the meme that, of course, would be used. But
I like the the what do you call it, a meme? Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Yeah. That has him on it and says, I don't know what your question is, but the answer is aliens.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Yeah. I did a story about all of the memes, and I was writing a story about him, a Read It. I think it was a Read It thing where he was answering questions from people, and he talked about his UFO sighting. But he also talked about these memes and how he thinks they're pretty funny, so I posted a bunch of them, some of the ones that I thought were funniest. I think that was one of them, but really funny ones. And he actually read the story last time I ran into him. He said that he had read the story, and he thought it was pretty funny,
All right.
He really liked it. So that was good. He's a really cool guy. I mean, he's a really nice guy, and he is careful to say, hey, this is just speculation. I'm no expert, but...
Georgios Tsoukalos. How do you say his last name?
Tsoukalos. As far as I know, I'm pretty sure it's Tsoukalos.
Yeah, right. Well, is that it for this evening?
That is it for this evening, my friend. Of course, you can read all of this at openminds.tv, and we've got headlines up there all the time as well if you want to see those. Really, you just heard the best of the best right now, in my humble opinion.
All right. All right, sounds great. So I'll be talking to you next week.
All right, talk to you next week, buddy.
All right, so hey, if all goes well, everyone, and you're actually listening live, you're going to see myself and Donnie up on video in just a minute right after this quick music break. But before that, I just want to give a little shout-out. I forgot to say this. If you go to podcastufo.com, you will see right on the sidebar, right next to the YouTube streaming, is the YouTube chat room. And it's going to show up every week that way by the magic of Sam Bossel down in Peru. Thanks so much, Sam. He's helped out the show all along, a great guy. And he's even stayed at my house when he was in New England, and I wasn't here. He had the run of the house to himself. So hang on just a second. I have to do something here. I think I figured out the static to this computer. We are ready in studio. And luckily, Donnie, welcome to the show. Oh, yeah, you need the microphone.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me, Martin. It's good to be here.
Well, I didn't actually invite you.
No, we're neighbors, so.
Yeah. Now, Donnie has a place on the lake, not really that far away from where I am. It's probably 4 or 5 miles or so, something like that, wouldn't you say?
I wouldn't want to walk it in this weather, that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I know. We had some snow out there. Anyway, so Donnie's a retired Boston police officer, listener of the show, and just happened to be here. I just got a email. Was it just today or was it yesterday?
I think it was yesterday. Yeah. I kind of gave you a warning I was going to be in the area.
So him being in the area, and then he asked if he could be in the studio, and I said, sure. And then just a few moments ago, I called our guest because I hadn't heard back from her today, Artie Sixkiller Clark. She was not returning my emails. And so I finally called her just a few minutes ago, like I said, and she just woke up and said, oh, I forgot all about the show. Just to let you know, next week we will have Ted Rowe on, and he's from NARCAP. Should be an interesting. I'm going to do a Google hangout with him, also live streaming here. Donnie, a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been interested in the subject for a long time. I guess I started very early as probably an 11-year-old kid. I forget exactly what year the book Incident at Exeter came out, which kind of piqued my attention, being from the area, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that book as a relatively young fellow and became very much interested in the topic, and I just kept reading and reading, and a poor librarian at the local city library where I used to go would kind of go nuts. I'd be pulling out all the cards on UFOs and reading all the books, and it really was something I was interested in very, very early in life. And I've never lost interest in it, really. I haven't.
Your career led you to being a police officer?
Right, right. I spent over 3 decades of service in the Boston Police Department. I probably spent about 90% of my time in the investigative branch and did all different types of investigations, drugs, you know, common crimes, fatalities, things of that nature, just about everything. And then later on during my career, I actually went to law school and became a lawyer.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I've always been interested in science and in evidence and also the scientific method. So, I mean, the whole UFO thing really appeals to me on a number of different levels.
Uh-huh. Wow. Hey, so I just want to say that tonight, you know, we are taking of course, I'm taking questions on chat, and also we are taking calls, and that number is 603-9674030. We also have Skype. Username is Marty Willis, MartyWillis. So anytime during the show here, we're going to try to stretch this out. I mean, again, this was just thrown at us a couple minutes ago, so and luckily you showed up on time. All right, so you're a police officer now. Did you ever talk to any of your fellow workers about your interest in UFOs?
Oh God, no.
No?
No, that would be the kiss of death.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, it's something I think in the field of policing, and it's just something that you probably wouldn't want to discuss things that are maybe avant-garde or things that are just outside of the norm, really, or what people perceive to be the norm. So I kind of kept my mouth shut for a long time, and mm-hmm. but I've always been interested in, and I know a couple of people who are kind of interested in it as well, but it's not a common subject for conversation around the station house.
Right, no. Right. Now, oftentimes I've said on this show that I do not agree with Seth Shostak from SETI when he says that policemen or astronauts or pilots are not any better observers than anyone else, and I, you know, disagree with that. What is your opinion about a police officer as far as being an observer?
Well, I think in basic training, and all throughout your career, really, you have to make observations. You see things happening, and you have to record them. And you have to record them in a very concise manner because, I mean, what you write down and what you see and what you later record could result in somebody being, you have a call coming in.
Yeah, I have a call coming in, and hang on. Caller, caller, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Martin, it's Ed in Norwich, Connecticut. Yes, can you hear me?
Hello, caller. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hang on just a minute. Maybe this thing right here. I'll try it now. Try it again. Can you hear me, caller?
Hi, Martin. It's Martin. It's Ed in Norwich.
It's not working so well.
That's a shame.
Yeah, that's a shame. I see you on there, caller, and I'm sorry. I'm going to have to look around and see what's going on. Why I can't seem to hear you. I'm sorry about that. If you can hear us.
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me? I can hear you. So I'm going to have to say goodbye.
I can.
Again, okay, bye-bye. It's a shame. I'm sorry.
Maybe they could give it another
okay.
shot.
Okay. No, so I'm going to say scratch the calls already.
Wow.
I'm really upset about that. I don't know why that was not working. So I'm going to please, if you're listening live, please do jump in the chat room. All you need is a Google account. It takes only a couple minutes to sign up. You can pose some questions that way. So, all right. So, okay. So you actually had a sighting though, during while you were a police officer. Right. But were you on duty at the time?
I was actually heading into the office, and it was at dusk, and it was probably late spring, early summer, and the it's probably a little bit later than probably 8 or 9 o'clock thereabouts, 7:30, 8 o'clock. And what I saw as I was driving down McClellan Highway, which anybody who knows Boston knows that that's right next to Logan Airport. And as you drive southerly, then you have to make a turn to the west in order to go through the Sumner Tunnel, which leads to downtown Boston and the rest of civilization down there,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
And there's a spot where you make that turn, and you actually have a good view of the Tobin Bridge, which is the really Route 1. It goes across what's the Mystic River. And at that point, as I'm looking over there, I actually saw two objects that were rather unusual. At first, I thought, you know, it's a couple of blimps, because it's a relatively common occurrence in that time of the year when the Red Sox are playing. They always have the blimp for the milk company, or the insurance company now has a blimp. And it's always tooling around the area of Fenway Park, which is relatively in close proximity to this area. So my first impression was, when I saw the first one, I said, oh, that's the milk blimp, or that's the insurance company blimp. Even though it was rather unusually colored, it was almost like a bronzish, goldish color, which I thought was strange. I thought it maybe had been the light reflection, but it was backlit. So I don't see how it could reflect light if the sun was on the opposite side of it. That made no sense. And then as I looked off in the distance, I saw another identical object, which was smaller but further away.
Really?
Yeah, so that was kind of odd. But the problem was, and this happened, I've had two sightings, and this is the issue I always run into. There's never enough time. I'm always in the middle of something. I'm always doing something that's more pressing.
Yeah.
And I, you know, as a little kid, you know, you read these books, you say, God, I wish I would have a sighting. And and then it happens, you know, your prayers are answered, and you don't have any time whatsoever to really to kind of make good observations and come up with some sort of theory about what it might be.
Right, right. So I'm while I'm talking here, I'm going to actually look at some settings at the same time. I was in the park down there by Newbury Street.
Right.
That, whatever that park is, I forget what it's called. It's beautiful.
You mean by the Charles River?
Yeah. No, it's the big park, big square in the middle of.
Oh,
the,
right. That'd be
Boston Commons.
That'd be the. Oh God.
Isn't it the Boston Commons?
Well, the Boston Common, and then there's another part that used to be in front of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. And, you know, I'm blanking on it. That's where the little ducks are, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
Boy, it's a good thing no one called you for help there, because you wouldn't know where the hell it was.
I never worked in that part of the city.
Yeah.
I never did.
Well, anyway, I was in that park with my son, and all of a sudden I saw a blimp going over. You know how slow they go.
Right.
Going over slow. So I went to get my... just as kind of a joke, to take a picture and then maybe Facebook say UFO or whatever, you know. As a joke, everyone has a joke. So I went to reach for my camera. By the time I got my camera out and I got the camera on the phone, a blimp that barely moves got away from me. So it over the trees. It went,
right.
You know, and into the trees, or the trees are blocking it. But
that's the public gardens. That's the name of that part, the public gardens.
All right.
So all the listeners, if they go to Boston, they'll realize that where Martin Willis was called the Boston Public Gardens.
Where I had my sighting, my blimp sighting.
The blimp sighting.
Yeah. I am just checking into settings here. And you also, you know, I didn't want to talk about this because we have a lot of time to kill here, but I didn't want to talk about it right away, but you went to Rendlesham Forest.
I did.
So why don't you talk about that while I mess around the settings here?
Boy, that's a long story.
Good.
Sure, we got enough time?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, my oldest son, you know, I've been coming up here to Western Maine since I was in utero, really. My mother, when she was pregnant with me, we would, you know, my father would come up with her. And so I'm basically, a child of Western Maine that's also a city kid. And obviously, you know, when my own kids were born and they want to spend time up here as well and would come up here. So my son became kind of interested in that. We'd go out at night and look at the stars and kind of say, you know, wouldn't it be great if something came out of the lake, or wouldn't it be great if something came over the mountains from New Hampshire and we could see it? Because really the sight lines here, as you know, it's not something that you would experience living in the city because of all the ambient light. Here you have a pretty decent view of what's going on in the sky at nighttime, provided, of course, that the weather is nice. So in any event, my son became pretty interested in that, and we would talk about it quite a bit. So I knew he was interested in the topic. And later on, when he got older, he graduated from high school. And I thought to him, you know, wouldn't it be great to invite him to take a trip with his old man over to Europe? So I said, hey, you know, what do you think about this idea? Would you like to go over to Europe? He said, yeah, I would. I'd like to go to London. I said, well, you know, why don't we think about a place other than London, which we've both already been to, and it's interesting, but what about Ipswich? And he said, well, what's out in Ipswich? I said, well, there's a place called, there's actually two old RAF air bases there. There's Woodbridge and Bentwaters. And there's a very interesting story, one very interesting case that's always intrigued me, that's called the Rendlesham sighting. And he did a little bit of reading on it. Of course, I had done a lot of reading on it. I've been very interested in that case since the very beginning, since that first got reported back in the 80s. So he said, yeah, sure, Pop, you know, let's take a fly over to Heathrow. We'll rent a car. We'll drive on the wrong side of the road, and we'll go out there and stay out there in Ipswich. And so we did. We flew over there. Flew into London, rented a car, took our life in our hands, and drove on the wrong side of the road for I don't know how many kilometers to get out to Ipswich.
Takes a little getting used to.
Yeah, it does. It really. It's weird. I think the whole idea of the passing lane really confuses Americans. I'm sure the listeners in Australia. In New Zealand, wouldn't have a problem with that because they drive on the wrong side of the road as well.
Yeah.
But in any event, we ended up out in Ipswich. I reached out to Jim Peniston because Jim was about ready to release his book. And I reached out to him on Facebook, and what a great guy, good guy. We had a lot of different conversations on Facebook, got back and forth. And I said, Jim, you know, I really would like to go out there and just be in the shoes that you were in with John Burroughs out there in that area. He said, well, you got to look up this fellow. His name is Gordy Gujar. And I said, well, and by the way, if Gordy is listening, big shout out to Gordy and also another fellow I'm going to mention in a few minutes. So anyway, I reached out to Gordy before we actually got to the U.K., and Gordy said, yeah, it's great. I'll set everything up for you. Where are you going to be staying? We stayed in Ipswich. And sure enough, he picked us up. And here's a fellow who's, you know, a younger fellow than I, obviously, but a guy who knows everything there is to know, really, about that whole area. And I would encourage any listener who wanted to go out there and kind of take a look around Rendlesham to just reach out on Facebook. His name is Gordy Gujar, G-O-O-G-E-R. It's an unusual name. Mm-hmm. It's a name you're not going to forget. But
yeah, and an easy one to find on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, very, very easy. I looked him right up, and he got right back to me. And what a nice, nice guy. But we spent a good 4 days out there in southeastern England. We actually went out to where Orford Ness Lighthouse was, and we actually went to the spot where this UAP is supposedly landed. And but before I get to that, I think we spent a good deal of time at that East Gate, mm-hmm. looking around that area. And you know, it's all overgrown now. It probably doesn't resemble anything that it resembled 30 years ago. But I was struck by the level of security that existed there at that time. It's apparent that, I mean, obviously, even though it's never been officially acknowledged by the American government, that there were nuclear weapons at both of those air bases
yes.
at the time.
When I had Colonel Charles Holt on, he got rather upset at me because I asked him that question. And and really, that was disrespectful. I didn't mean it to be, but, you know, he just can't. He can't. He can talk about the UFO sighting all he wants.
Right.
But he can't talk about that.
You know, it's interesting. I came to the same conclusion about Colonel Holt as well. Obviously, as a man who took a security oath at some point in his career, probably early on, and took it very seriously, and keeps it very seriously to this day, and I admire him for that. I mean, it's and then to kind of to be very forthcoming with his own observations, I thought was a good idea. It was wonderful as well because I mean, you could very easily. Just say your security oath prohibits you from commenting on anything whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But instead, he doesn't acknowledge that there were nuclear weapons on the base. He's keeping a security oath. And then again, he's also recounting these incredible things that those people saw there on several different nights. So it's the bases are enormous. They really are.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like square miles, we're talking.
Oh yeah, it's like it's almost as if it was described to me by another fellow that like two American good-sized towns were torn out from the Midwest and transplanted to southeastern England. I mean, it's really on that scale.
Did you read the book Left at Eastgate?
I did.
And just to let you know, I mentioned this, talked about it with Alejandro Rojas on Open Minds with Lee Spiegel a while back, but and it wasn't something I brought up or something that I read, but Peter Robbins now is now distancing himself from Larry Warren.
Right.
There's a lot of issues there. So it's that book may not be so factual, and according to Charles Holt, it's not. And Charles offered many times to help them. With that, sorry, you have to hold that microphone.
No worries. Yeah. It's a good workout.
Yeah, said, "Hey, I'll help out," and you know, he wanted to get the truth out there, and they basically turned down his help, and you know, in the book, turned left. That's for sure, and went its own way. And I just don't know how much credibility Larry Warren. I hate to say that publicly, but there's some issues that seem to be surfacing, so. I take, since that is such a convoluted case with so many different viewpoints, I think Charles Holt is probably the, you know, just with his position, he doesn't make this a whole part of his life. He's not looking to make a living out of it.
Right.
As he said himself, he puts it on the shelf, unless he's like on a show or when he got involved in writing the last book. So he's not looking for any type of gain. And I think that's more of the solid story. It's very, very fascinating. Jim Peniston has many times said that he would be on the show, and I have never been able to nail him down. I don't know what I believe about the memory of the binary code that he downloaded after when he claims he downloaded when he touched the craft. That is something that I will. I don't want to say confront him about, but I'll certainly talk to him about it and, you know, just hear about that. I've heard other takes on that as well, that book that the binary code was in was read by someone before the code was in there. So it's a tough one to know.
It is. And going back to Larry Warren for a minute, I mean, it's... When I read that text, it struck me as rather incredible, some of the things that were seen. And and let's not forget that there were, I mean, you had a lieutenant colonel of the United States Air Force who was involved in this, along with men who were assigned with an incredible responsibility. And that is to secure nuclear weapons that would have been used had the old Soviet Union or the Warsaw Pact engaged the NATO in Western Europe. So, I mean, that's an incredible responsibility. You're talking about weapons that, that are capable of wiping out cities and towns. So, I mean, when you look at the profile of the type of men that were involved in that incident, for somebody to say that, you know, the making this up out of whole cloth, it strikes me as rather dubious. It's doubtful, in my opinion. But getting back to Larry Warren, though, I thought that the observations that were recorded in his book were just so, I don't want to use the word outrageous, but, I mean, they really stretched the imagination. They really did. And later on, when you had, John and Jim Peniston and, of course, Colonel Halt went public with this, then I think you saw a more gravitas in the way that these people spoke about the incident. It was still a fantastic story. It was a riveting story. But it was free of, I think, maybe some of the embellishments or some of the fanciful ideas that were expressed in Larry Warren's text. So I guess I did read the book. I thought it was an interesting read. And it just didn't add up, in my opinion. I mean,
yeah. Well, Charles Halt's book is very, there's a lot of, it's 800 some odd pages. It's very factual. It's a factual book because he, with his co-author, I'm spacing out, I will tell you his name in just a minute. He's going to be on our show coming up in just a couple of weeks. And that is John Hansen. John Hansen will be on.
I just ordered that text. I ordered it online, and it should be, well, you know, here in Western Maine. it'll show up when it'll show up.
Yeah. You know, the police can't even find this property. I don't know how you got here. You know, I'm up on top of a mountain in Maine. And,
I was a skilled investigator, Martin.
Yeah. someone made a point on the chat room. Did anyone ever claim that they got any type of downloading before the internet came along? I mean, that's a really good question. I don't know how.
Before the internet came along, I mean, when I was in high school, we studied, I think it was Fortran back in those. I mean, computer programming was in its infancy in Fortran. So, I mean, the idea of binary codes was out there, and I'm going back quite a ways, you know, when I was in high school, was in the 70s.
The event happened in 1980.
Right.
Now, I'm wondering when he came out with, if anyone knows in the chat room or listening live, that is, when he actually came out with the binary code thing, if he came out with it after the internet became active in the late, more toward the late 80s, early 90s.
But binary code was known, I mean, we when I went to high school in Boston, I went to Boston Latin School, and we were talking about binary codes, and you know, base one systems with 010101. So I mean, this was a topic of discussion back in the mid 70s. So in terms of binary codes being out there and being known, I think that if you had any sort of background in computers at that time, and of course computers were in their infancy, then you would know that their binary code had existed and that it could be, it could signify certain things. Now, whether or not, you know, and I wouldn't pass judgment on Jim Peniston, because in all of my conversations with him, he struck me as a really straightforward guy.
Yeah, the thing that clouds everything is the fact that he was most likely or possibly heavily drugged through the whole interrogation debriefing, as it was called, but more or less an interrogation.
Well, I think Colonel Halt was very clear on that when he said that those guys were, and I'm using his own words, they were messed with.
Yes. Yeah, they were messed with. And I had, I don't know if I should really say this because I'm just going to tell the listening audience, I was down in North Carolina with Charles Halt talking to him a few years ago, and I could swear that he said that he was also drugged. Now, he denies that he said it. We both, and I lost a friend, Robert Hastings, through this whole thing. Robert doesn't want anything to do with me, unfortunately, because I announced that on the show.
That's too bad.
And I would be willing to bet anything that I heard him say that. But as Charles Hult has agreed, and we have talked about it, he believes that I believe I heard him. And we're okay. just going to leave it at that, because that is absolutely the truth. I do believe I heard him say that. But I'm not, now I'm not saying that that is in fact. I'm saying that I do believe that I heard him say that, but he says that he did not. And I think he's a man of integrity, so I will not challenge him on that.
No, I think that they all are. And when you go to look at John Burroughs, for example, I mean, yeah. he had to sue the United States government. He had to mm-hmm. sue the military, the United States government, in order to retrieve his health records. And the government came back and they said that they had no record of his service. I mean, can you imagine that?
I know. Yeah.
That's absurd.
Yeah. They have records going back to the Civil War.
Of course. You
know? And they don't just disappear.
And then later they say, oh, they acknowledge, yeah, they did have his records, but they were classified. Why on earth would anybody have classified medical records?
Yeah, yeah, I know. Well, he won.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And he received the medical treatment, and my understanding from the Veterans Administration, they're taking care of him now because I guess a couple of senators got involved and intervened.
Right, right. So if anyone in the message room listening live has any questions you'd like to ask of either myself or my guest, feel free to. I'll try to catch them. A lot of people are chatting. So feel free to ask a question. I may try to take one more call and just see if I did try to change a couple of settings. And, if you'd like to call, I'd like for someone to call instead of Skype because that could have been the person Skyping. It may have, been an issue with their microphone. So if you wouldn't mind using the phone number, if you'd like to call in, I'll give it one more shot. That's 603-967-4030. If you forget the number, it's on top of the homepage on podcastufo.com. Donnie, there's a question here for you. During your time in law enforcement, have you ever had to speak with a citizen with an unbelievable story that you believe despite your better judgment, paranormal or not?
I really can't say that I did. My investigations were limited to basically the parameters of crimes. But I will say this, that had somebody come forward to me with an extraordinary story, I think I would listen to it as an objective investigator. I mean, the job of an investigator is not to jump to a conclusion. It's to study the evidence. Mm. You go where the facts take you. Look at the science. Look at the forensics. And when you add all of these things together, and then listen to what the person's saying to you, then you can form an opinion as to their veracity and what exactly happened. Because, you know, if you have an incident that involves, you know, go back to Rendlesham for a minute. You have, let's say that there are four principal people involved. You know, every single one of those people is telling the truth. And here's my rationale for saying that. Even though some of the stories are different, what they're saying is what they saw from their own perspective, and I've seen this time and time again in investigations. You'll get a witness who will tell you exactly what that person saw. They'll look you in the eye and they'll say, yes, that's true. That's what I saw. This is what the person drove. This is what the person said. And then you say, thank you very much. You record their statement, obviously. And then you go on to witness number two. And witness number two will give a variation of witness number one said, even though they hadn't spoken. Mm. They're telling the truth, but they're telling it from their own perspective.
Yeah.
So when you have any type of a case, whether it's a criminal case or a case where something like this occurs, you're going to have four truths. You're going to have four truths. And I guess the key of it is trying to sew these things together and come up with a hypothesis or a theory that you can actually, in the case of a crime, you know, take to court and hopefully put somebody in jail. But in the case of a UAP, to kind of at least get a good inclination of what in fact happened by stitching together the four different versions.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, I've talked with Ben Hansen, who, you know, trained as an FBI agent.
Right.
And he told me, you know, he went through training that helped identify
lies.
You
got a call coming in there, Martin?
Oh, we have a call coming in. Let's give it a try. See what happens.
Now, I've talked.
All right. Caller, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Martin. Can you hear me?
I'm going to try this right here. Caller, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
All right. Well, unfortunately, I'm going to, let's see what I can do. Don't hang up just yet. I'm going to try changing the preferences to here and see if anything happens.
Yes, might be going, can you hear me?
Oh, wait. No, I
all
see
right.
this thing.
Hang on just 1 minute. We'll try one more. Okay, caller, can you hear us?
I can hear you. I can hear you from the start.
All right. I think...
Hey, Martin.
Oh,
I can hear you.
Okay, try one more time, caller.
Maybe if they use Skype and just call
and,
the
and,
US
and they can hear me as well in the chat.
Well, all right. And I'm sorry to the listener to take up that time. We'll just move on without Skyping part of this and just take your chat messages. And let's see, we had one up here earlier. Let's see. Were you aware of the Hudson Valley sightings when they were happening?
No, actually I wasn't.
Uh-huh.
It's something that, and I had driven, you know, back and forth to New York through that particular area during the time in question, and I was completely unaware of that at the time. Didn't become aware of it until much later, probably into the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's a fascinating group of cases.
Yes, it is.
Some very respected and unimpeachable witnesses.
Oh, well, how about that? Now, the people on on live streaming, I guess it's being recorded too, could hear the Skype caller fine.
Wow.
So, sorry about that. You know, I'm wondering if maybe if I plugged into my computer instead of my mixing board, that's probably it. We'll figure that out by the next show. And, again, I apologize. That must sound really funny while the caller is trying to talk to me and I can't hear him.
That's a shame.
And everyone else can. All right.
But what about a normal telephone? With a normal telephone?
It would do the same thing, yes.
It would do the same thing?
Yes.
That's a shame.
Well, we'll figure it out. This is a work in progress. It's the second live streaming show, we'll just go. Again, if you're just jumping in, we're going to have a show called the Everything Else Show. I didn't know what else to call a show because I do a show on UFOs, and it's going to be anything, basically any topic. So I do have on Monday at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on March 13th. I know that's way ahead. But I have Stan Gordon coming on to talk about cryptoids and Bigfoot. I'm also going to be doing there's some really good shows outside of the paranormal that I'm working on. So that's going to be on Mondays. And if you'd like to get a notice of when that's coming up, if you're a YouTube subscriber to my channel, I do believe you'll get a notice at least 8 hours or 12 hours ahead. But also you can go to podcastufo.com, and right on the right sidebar there is a weekly newsletter sign up. You just put your email address in there and click go, and we're going to try another call here. You'll probably hear him. I'll just try this one more time. Okay, hello, caller. All right,
hey, Martin,
I'm going to try
going?
Something here.
You're struggling a little bit, ain't you?
Hang in there.
Okay. It's John Tackett here, by the way.
Let's see what happens.
Okay, caller.
Can you hear me?
All right, hold on. Do not hang up yet. I know everyone can probably hear him but me.
Martin is clicking like a demon.
Okay, hello, hello, hello. Can you guys hear me? Yep, I heard me.
All right, caller.
Yep.
Are you there?
Yep.
Nothing is working.
What a shame.
Yep, yep. Oh, all right. All right. So we'll figure that out next week. Again, I take calls. That's next week. I'll be doing that all week long. And so, again, if you're listening live, I do apologize that I can't take your calls. But and I know you can hear him, but I can't hear him. And I, again, there's nothing really I can do about that while the show is live. So I will get that fixed next week and do a bunch of tests on it to make sure I got it.
Right.
And hang in, everyone. Okay. All right. All right. So if you'd like to pose a question, instead, just go into the chat room at podcastufo.com or on YouTube and ask a question there. That would be fine.
I'm not getting audio on my
yeah,
my
neither am I.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
Oh, there we go. Very good.
Okay, great.
But I think somebody asked if I was ever a field investigator, and the answer is no. I kind of wish I had the time. I'm retired, but actually I'm semi-retired, so I still stay pretty active in consulting. So one of these days when I do pull a pin completely, I will definitely sign on as a field investigator, because it gives me the opportunity to really follow up on some of these things and bring some of my investigative expertise mm-hmm. to the table. One of the areas you mentioned, Ben Hansen, and one of the things that I like about Ben a lot is that Ben is a very good investigator in terms of being able to read nonverbal cues.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
he's done that. He actually yeah. did that, I think, when a couple of presidents were asked.
Yes, questions. Obama and Clinton.
Right.
And I think Hillary Clinton as well. I think he's analyzed that. He's going to be at the Phoenix International UFO Congress in a couple of weeks, which I'm going to, by the way. And if any listeners out there are going to be there, please do email me while you're there, and we'll hang out together at martin@podcastufo.com, and we'll make sure we get together. So, yeah, he's going to be going, he's going to be doing a presentation on just that.
Oh, on nonverbal cues.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's really cool stuff. Yeah. In fact, I had the opportunity to study that in Quantico back in the early 1990s.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I was there for 11 weeks. Wow. And it is enormously useful. And there's a reason why in poker you can't see below the waist of the other players.
Because,
really? Oh, yeah. Oh,
things
yeah.
going on down there?
Yeah. Your feet are the most honest part of your body.
Okay. It's the feet. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the feet. It really is. And I could talk about that for an hour, but that's not what people want to hear.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's interesting. Wow. There was a question. Had you ever heard or yourself of or... Have you ever heard anyone that wanted to make a report to the police department about a UFO?
No, I haven't. And the way that the calls come into the police agency, it comes into a 9/11 system.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I really shouldn't condemn a group of people and paint them all with the same brush. But, I mean, if somebody called up 911 and said, you know, I just saw... a glowing object that just mm-hmm. sat down on a tripod in my backyard, would you have sent somebody over to look at it? I think that I don't think there'd be an open mind towards that call. They probably would send somebody over there. But
now, did you hear about? Did you ever hear on the show me explaining my sighting?
No.
Oh, okay. Because that's why the person put that up on the message board was when I had my sighting, and I was in Carmel Valley. And an object went over me when I was in a hot tub, and it headed toward Monterey, and I called the Monterey Police Department. When I called, I did not call a 911 number. I called the police department.
You called the local police yeah. just on the direct line,
yeah.
right?
But anyway, it was the woman was very sarcastic and put me on hold
right.
for 15 minutes, and then I finally hung up. You know, I just didn't bother. All I wanted to find out was, had anyone else seen it?
Right.
You know, that's the only thing I was really interested in. And, you know, I didn't say I wanted to report it. I just said, you know, it's heading that way. And they do have, there is a naval, not a base, a training center or something there in Monterey.
There is. Yeah. Yep.
So, but anyway, that was my one sighting and my dealing with the police Department. Now, from what I understand, after having Jen Harzan on the show, he was saying, and also Peter Davenport, that most police stations in this country do have MUFON's number, and perhaps Peter Davenport's site as well.
Right.
But that's not anything that was offered, you know, to me. Had you ever heard, again, you know, I know it sounds like you haven't, but have you ever heard of anyone reporting or any police officer talking about a reporting of any kind?
The only ones I can refer to are the ones that Gary Heseltine in the UK has assembled on his own accord with, mm-hmm. with brother and sister police officers in the UK. And also the number of cases in the Midwest where they actually went out and chased something. Mm-hmm. And then you had...
Right. Went to different counties and everything.
Right. I mean, that was just fascinating. There was a case also, if I want to say it was Michigan, where it was nearly collided with a police car and bent over the UHF antenna on the top of the police car itself. I thought that was fascinating.
Oh, yes. The car still exists.
The car still exists.
Yeah. Yep. I've tried to reach that. I can't get his name right now. I can't remember his name, but I have tried to reach him. I'd love to have him on the show.
But going back to the case in the Midwest, you had a police officer who actually took out a handheld radar unit, which is used to measure vehicle speed, mm-hmm. and aimed it at this UAP, and it registered a speed. I think, and it was a rather low speed too. It was like in the 40s. And here's something. I mean, what type of object? I mean, other than perhaps a weather balloon, or a blimp, can move and sustain itself in the air at 45 miles an hour.
Well, a helicopter, but, you know...
But it's going to make a lot of noise.
It's going to make a lot of noise,
right.
Yeah.
And it's going to be very apparent that it's a helicopter. But right. This thing made no noise.
Right, right. What do you think about the Socorro case? That comes up a lot. And just to show the listener out there who's listening on YouTube, this is the... this is the hat I got from Tony Angiola, and of course they made me buy it, and Ben Moss last year. That is what Lonnie Zamora initially wrote, drew out as the official symbol that he saw on the Socorro sighting craft. Not the other one that the Air Force told him to announce if he was interviewed. Because they just want to make sure if there was any copycats that they'd be able to, you know, figure it out. So that's the original. That's just the original symbol there.
Yeah, it's funny. I just ordered J. Allen Hynek's Dr. Hynek's book, and I hadn't read it yet. But and Zamora obviously is mentioned in there rather prominently. And I have tremendous respect for the late Dr. Hynek because of a whole scientific approach and his scientific integrity. I think.
Yeah.
Comes through because he was hired to do something and he thought he was doing it correctly. But when it turned out that the facts is, and the evidence that he studied, it went contrary to what his initial hypothesis was. And, you know, in the whole Michigan swamp gas case, I think that really kind of...
That was kind of the turning point.
Right.
So he comes over to the other side. It would be really something if someone could do a documentary on that man.
That would be fascinating.
Yeah.
It would.
It really would. I know that there is one in the works. I had a guest on. I've been trying to reach her to find out if it's coming to any conclusion. I'm John Mack.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And, yep. Another book I have on order, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, there was a I don't know. How long, or I should ask you this, when did you start on the police force in the Boston area?
1979.
Okay, I believe 78 or 79 was that major triangle down in Massachusetts. Had you heard about that?
I had not.
It was seen by some TV personalities, I think a news personality or something like that. But it was also seen by someone that I know. You know, she was riding with her aunt in the car and saw that this was the same incident. It was a major triangle. It was either 78, 79. It might have happened the year before you started.
These down in the Dartmouth, Massachusetts?
It was, I know she was sort of in the Amesbury area.
Okay, that's on the opposite direction. That's
Yeah, But I don't know. The other sighting, I think, was further south toward Boston.
Right. Yeah. No, I hadn't heard of that, actually. No.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, so many things happen close to home.
Yeah.
And, you know, you I think you know more about something that happened in the case of, you know, the UK, some 3,000 miles away.
Right, right. Where did you grow up?
I grew up right in the city. Yeah, the southernmost part of the city.
Now, I remember, you know, I grew up in southern Maine, moved around the country a bit, but I remember there was a flap back in the, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s. I mean, I was a young kid, but still, I do remember that. Do you remember anything about that in New England, basically?
Well, obviously the Exeter.
The Exeter incident,
which is another police-involved case. Well,
that's
actually police officer witnesses that saw this thing.
Yeah.
Which, to me, adds a layer of believability, I think, as professional people who make professional observations and record them. I think it gives it a higher level of reliability. Then, you know, obviously you had I heard about the Loring incidents, when Loring was a mm-hmm. B-52 base.
That's in Brunswick, Maine, right, or that area?
That's up in the county, way up.
Or is it even further?
Right, way up on the border with Canada.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of
Loring Air Force Base.
One down in, okay. Right.
Yeah, you're thinking of Brunswick, which is a naval air station.
Yeah, okay.
No, Loring was an Air Force base, which was armed during the Cold War with B-52s that were armed with nuclear weapons, nuclear bombs, which mm-hmm. obviously were going to be used on the Warsaw Pact or in the Soviet Union at the time. But this was all during that time where we now get these reports of UAPs that were over air bases, nuclear-armed air bases in the Midwest. And this is all about the same time. And it was fascinating. But I heard about that when I was a young guy, because obviously spent a lot of time up here in Maine, and you would hear these sort of things. You know, Maine being relatively not very highly populated state, you hear about stuff.
Right, right. Hey, we made it on hours so far.
Imagine that.
Yeah, it is. It is amazing. So that's it for the free part of the show. And while editing this podcast down to the 1 hour, I noticed the static. I don't know what's going on, and I do apologize for that. I have bought new equipment to try to get rid of that static. I don't know if there's any sound audio people out there that might be able to help me, but if you can give me send me an email and try to walk me through. I've gone online trying to figure it out. Again, I've replaced the equipment. I'm not sure what's going on. If you email me at martin@podcastufo, if you have any ideas, that would be helpful. And our show next week will be Ted Rowe from NARCAP. Should be a really good show, and hope you're back here to listen. And it's a lot of fun to watch the video live streaming, if you'd like to do that, on podcastufo.com. That's on Wednesday evenings at 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks a lot, and remember to keep your eyes to the sky.